Mr. Cutlets, Mr. Cutlets, when you swing around that pork chop, I get a whiff of heaven every time you pass my doorstop. With the chicken and the brisket and the marrow and the giblets, Mr. Cutlets, spend some time with me. I know it's crazy, but it's true. It's not worth eating if it lacks the greasy and the chew. Mr. Cutlets, Mr. Cutlets, when you burst into the kitchen, you grab a fist of meatballs and a bone for wishing. With the bacon and the lamb chops and the scrapple and the ham hock, Mr. Cutlets, spend some time with me. Spend some time. Spend some time with me.
Hi, I'm Josh Ozersky, and this is the Mr. Cutlets Show. We're here at Roberta's Wonderful Pizzeria Restaurant in Bushwick, New York, which is kind of an apocalyptic type area. And this is like, remember in The Road Warrior when they had the people that lived inside where the trucking, where the oil foundry was?
Yeah.
It's like that, only that makes pizza instead of oil. And I've got two of my good friends here. I've got the photographer, Melanie Dune, who did My Last Supper. He's one of our most gifted portraitists. And I've got John Fraser, who is not only one of our most talented and ambitious young chefs, but frequently has strong opinions, though not today, about matters relating to gastronomy and the world of restaurants. Now,
ouch.
We are
poor John.
We are brought to you today by Barter House. But John, I'm going to give... the reason I say that is because in the last episode, I refer to... you know, I have a thing called Ozersky.tv. I'm also the national dining columnist for Time Magazine, but Ozersky TV is probably a more enjoyable medium for appreciating my particular freakish gifts, I think. So I... And also I own it. So I try to promote it.
And coffee.
And I talked about Shoshan Hergott in the last show and how I thought that Frank Bruni's review of it. Oh, yeah. Oh, we have a... Oh, wait. What's this? We have a caller.
Wow.
We're going to get back to... We're going to ask John about Shoshan Hergott and other things. But in the meantime, we have a caller at 718-497-2128. He's calling us with a question. Caller,
hello?
Are you online?
I am. Hello?
Hello.
Oh, hi. Hi, Mr. Cutlets.
Hello, caller.
I had a quick question. I actually, I was recently in Spain, and I just stumbled across a kangaroo steak, and I had it, and it was one of the tastiest things I've ever had in my life. And since getting back to New York, or America, I've been searching for this, trying to find out something about how kangaroos are raised or what the state of kangaroo steak cuisine is around the world. And I've been hitting a lot of brick walls. I couldn't come up with anything. I didn't know anybody that had even tasted it before. And I was wondering if maybe you had any insight on the kangaroo situation.
Well, I'm afraid to tell you, caller, that thanks to the short-sightedness and hidebound conventionality of the Food and Drug Administration, there are a number of prohibited kinds of livestock that are kept away from our borders. Now, while you would think that as Americans, and hence as the summit of the food chain, it would only be natural that all edible animals were available to us, they
obviously.
Got, yeah, I mean, they got the willies about letting in a lot of animals that have not been processed in health certified facilities. And I suspect that the kangaroo you ate was a wild animal, which is one of the reasons it tasted so good. And they don't like to let in wild animal meat because they don't know what is living inside it. Like maybe it's got a bug or something.
Huh.
Well, I have to tell you that I have had kangaroo jerky, a la beef jerky, turkey jerky, and it was delicious.
Now, did you have that here in
the
United
States? No, I did not. And then to follow up with what you said, I have had it in Australia, and you are not allowed to bring it back here. And Skippy, the bush kangaroo, was one of the most popular. It's like, you know, Sesame Street.
Well, you know what I always wondered, Melanie, given how much people like kangaroos and their playful, childlike, bouncy ways, why didn't anybody ever grow them here?
Right.
They could sell them to zoos or let children ride around on them or whatever.
Because they can't tolerate, I think they can't tolerate the climate.
Is a kangaroo, I think it's a rodent.
Yeah. No, it's a marsupial.
Oh, marsupial. Okay.
But it's also that I would answer, and completely uninformed, the temperature.
Why? That's hot there. It's hot here.
I mean, you know, gloves and hat and
well, they can live. They don't have to go to New Hampshire. We can put them in Alabama. They're probably smarter than the populace. Sir, did you have any other thoughts or questions relating to meat, food, or restaurants?
I mean, that was really the big one. I love the show. I'm glad you're back this week, though. I mean, I had to give you a shout out for that. But yeah, no, that's about it. I guess it's pretty much covered. I'm a little disappointed, but thank you. I mean, you definitely answered it.
You're not the first person to be disappointed by Josh.
I know, really. Just ask my girlfriend. But listen, let me tell you something. I am so grateful that you listened to the show. I mean, I was on hiatus for a while because I got so much going on. For example, there's Ozersky TV, Time Magazine. I'm writing a book about the Colonel. And, sir, this is something I think you should know about. In fact, your call is going to be the first time I bring this up. And, in fact, the fact of your calling makes you get a free ticket. John, you don't know about this either. Melanie, I don't think you do either. I'm doing a huge event this summer. Remember every year I have Meatopia, my huge invite-only...
Yeah, super delicious.
Yeah, super delicious, super exclusive meat festival. Well, this year it's open to the public. We're going to do it. We're going to do it. Me and Jimmy Carbone from Jimmy's 43 are doing it as a charity event, and we're taking over Governor's Island. We're going to have 30 chefs. It's going to be twice as much food as the Big Apple Block Party. All the greatest barbecuers. I'm going to cook... we're going to get Seamus, Salakis, Zach, Mike White, all the top guys.
Caller, where are you from?
I'm from Bushwick, actually, right around the Mad Max zone out by where you guys are.
There it is. See? You heard him. He gave his word. He promised us safe passage. Well, sir, anyway, if you send me an email to josh@ozersky.tv, I will make sure you get a free ticket for you and a friend to go to Meatopia and eat some food on me. It's July 11th in Governor's Island. Thank you for calling.
Sweet. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
The next caller. Oh, no, but we should talk amongst ourselves.
Well, I'd like to return to this subject. Now, John... He doesn't want a dog sifty, and I don't blame him for that.
I don't think we can yet. That's my only point, is that I don't think we can yet.
Okay, I mean, I have my own opinions about it, but God knows I don't want to open myself up to someone, you know, saying about all my faults and inventorying my shortcomings, because I'm sure they're a lot worse than sifties. That said, it's clear to me from his works in general and his Shoshone Hergot review in particular that he considers... fine dining restaurants to be something of an anachronism, and that he cannot or will not wholeheartedly endorse them in the way that a previous critic would have, you know, taking the whole zeitgeist element out of it.
Right. Yeah, I guess I think my fear would be that it could be the sort of the final dagger in what fine dining has been celebrated for, you know, hundreds of years to be, because the chain reaction starts that if you can't get a good New York Times review and you spend, you know, let's say more than $2 million on a restaurant and you want to be a fine dining restaurant and you want to do it maybe like they used to do it, in quotations, basically what you're saying is that if you can't get a New York Times review that's at least 2 to 3 stars, really great, perhaps 4 if you really want to go there, then you can't survive.
I think, right?
If you can't get a good New York Times review, then you're not going to open that restaurant. And if you're not going to open that restaurant, then ultimately what you're saying is that kind of food is, or that style of dining is dead.
And it's not, two stars won't get it done.
I think if for them build it will, out, though. I think for them it will. He's been very well
for
received.
Sean Hergot?
Yeah, I do. I think that it's going to be, and here's the other thing, you know, Josh, this is one more thing. When, say, Ruth Reichel, right?
Right.
Back in the the celebrated days of food writing in the New York Times before, right? Okay, what was that?
Nothing.
All right. When she didn't commonly just toss 3 stars at a restaurant. In fact, many restaurants got 2 first, and a year later were reviewed for 3. In other words, they had to earn that third star, right? I can name you one very famous chef, a great chef, Rocco DiSpirito, for instance.
He got 2 at Union Pacific.
Yeah, he started with 2 and then got 3 at a later date, right?
Well, it makes sense. I mean, they bring the game, but I think that the economic reality today is that if you do a restaurant, I mean, like, you got to figure that gets at least a $5 million build out for that, Sean Hergott. Yeah. Now, it's in a condominium in some area that you have to practically take a helicopter to get to. I mean, literally, like, that restaurant is wholly dependent on whatever Wall Street plutocrats.
Right.
And, well, that was going to be my point, was that if it's not a 3-star, people aren't going there. Because there are people, you know, we're sitting here, we're foodies. I mean, I hate to say it, but it's true. So I think that somebody that's reading the paper and is looking for star, going to take wife, going to take date, going to go there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, first of all, any 3-star restaurant that's not named Gramercy Tavern, Union Square Cafe, Danielle, La Bernadette. I mean, there's a very short list of restaurants like that. When you're talking about people who are maybe, most of the people that eat, I don't know tell me if this is true or not. It seems to me that most of the people that eat in a 3-star restaurant do it maybe twice a year.
Okay.
Now, I know you have people who come in and eat there Wednesday night because you're also a neighborhood restaurant.
Yeah, we depend on, actually, you know, I don't think that anymore you can really, because there are so many choices, you can't just be a special occasion restaurant. It's very difficult to survive that way unless you are truly price gouging and taking, you know, people's bank accounts to task. You really need to be a once a week kind of place for a number of people, or you're not going to live
in that becomes a neighborhood.
Yeah.
But can a 3-star restaurant ever be that? I mean,
I think the Dovetail is that.
Well,
Dovetail is
that.
Dovetail,
yeah, it is that. I mean,
Dovetail is that.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
That's a wonderful thing about Dovetail. And it really, I should have hailed you as one of my chefs of the future. I'm doing a series in Time called Chef of the Future.
How the fuck was I left out of that?
Yeah, exactly. Now you tell him.
Well, you know what? I'll do another one about you.
Rewrite. Right.
Well, no, because I wasn't thinking about it. But that's to do 3-star food as neighborhood food. I don't know how you do it, though.
I can tell you how. I can tell. I mean, from an outsider, I would say that is knowing who I am, knowing what I like. I come there and they say, "Oh, Mel, you know, we love you. We know you love this. It's your comfort. Right. It's your comfort. It's your, you know."
It's service.
Yeah.
Ultimately, it comes down to service. Yep. Yeah.
And it's providing me with what I love. And if it's
right.
I mean, if I lived on the Upper West Side, John's restaurant is on 77th Street and Columbus Avenue, right next to Shake Shack. And if I lived there, I probably wouldn't on a Wednesday night go have a $100 tasting menu. But if I knew that I could go in and tell John, John, I want a nice veal chop.
Exactly.
Can you make me maybe some little potatoes with it or whatever? And I knew that it wasn't just going to be like, you know, like Jim O'Blarney's Shillelagh Cafe, you know, throw it under the broiler.
Totally.
Shillelagh.
So, no, but I think that's what makes it a neighborhood place. I mean,
But Sean Hergott does tweezer food, and he hates tweezer food. There's no way he would have given. I'll tell you, it's a good thing for 11 Madison that they got in under the wire with Bruni. His mind had grown large enough.
What is tweezer food? Is that literally like I'm tweezing my eyebrows? Sorry, guys.
Go ahead, tell her.
I would never use that term, just to be clear, but Josh's definition of tweezer food.
No, tell her why it's called tweezer.
There is a tool called a tweezer, right?
And they put the food on there. I've seen it in the kitchen.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, right.
And Josh, you know, rails against tweezer food.
Right. I don't rail against it. I respect it. I don't like it, but I respect it.
Josh is hungry.
Right. Right. As long as the flavors are bold, I think that tweezer food is legal.
I mean, look, the bottom line is this. I'm a writer, okay? I'm not a critic. I don't go in anonymously. Everybody knows who I am. But I write about food. I make value judgments about food. Yeah. Now, I don't like tweezer food. I would rather eat a big pork chop with a, you know, that hasn't been trimmed, whatever. But the fact that somebody's making tweezer food, like, I don't degrade it in a literal sense. Like, it's being degraded to call it 2 stars because today people would rather have a taco. You know what I mean? Like, that's not for me to say.
Right.
Now, on that note, I think we should take a little break. I think we should take a break and we should come back here at Roberta's on the Mr. Cutlets Show.
Yes, y'allin' to the light beatin'. You can either dance or just have a seat and listen to the layin'. What I am slayin', a different kind of rapper language that I am sayin'. To all the party people that exorbit the info, when it come to rockin' parties, I am a info maniac, brainiac for doin' my dancin'. My record make the music, we'll put you in a trance and hypnotize your body and like you playin' cardigan. You won't be fightin' the illin', you just be partyin' down with the funky sound with yours truly. With the original B-I-Z, I mean, okay, I was the E and I came to have fun and not be number one and just here to let you know who's like running the place and everywhere that I perform and do a show, as long as you know that.
Nobody beats the biz.
Nobody beating the biz.
Nobody beats the biz.
Nobody beating the biz.
Nobody beats the biz.
Nobody beating the biz.
Nobody beats the biz.
Nobody beats the biz.
You know me at the B-I-C-M-A-R-K-I-E. I go for what I know, do in a show for human beings. I'm guaranteed to rock, to make the ladies scream and shout. I'm bound to wreck your body as they turn the party out. The Marty rapper, no tapper, always have a fun. And when you hear the Biz Monkey, you get the job done. Yes, I'm the M-A-R-K-I-E, though that's me. I got the set of step to keep.
Hi, I'm Josh Ozersky, and this is the Mr. Cutlets Show at Roberta's in Bushwick, New York. That was the stylings and flow of the one and only Biz Monkey. We're doing old school hip hop as today's bumpers.
Josh was beatboxing.
Just shows how street I am. Yeah, that was. I was almost going to fill in for the human beatbox when he had a heart attack, but instead I went into writing. Now, having exhausted the topic of fine dining and its discontents, I want to turn towards Melanie's core competency. Now, Melanie, for those of you who don't know, is the author of a book called, probably a number of works, but also a book called My Last Supper, that is portraits of chefs talking about their last meal. And it's one of the most beautiful and interesting and intelligent books.
Oh my God, and you're being so nice.
Yeah, well,
I
want to
like shed a tear. And I'm not being sarcastic.
It's a little bit, it's porno. It's porno.
Well, you know, it's just very, but it's not,
it's pornographic in a way.
No, but it's food.
It's great.
Porn.
That's what I'm saying. Of course, I'm saying that.
I disagree. I venture to disagree. Food porn to me, it's like when they show a picture of a spaghetti that's so lusciously good that you want to eat it up. Mm-hmm. And Melly's things aren't like that. They're about the personality and character, and there's a certain surreal aspect.
Yeah, but there's a delicious element about even the characters. She has a way of, you know.
Jeez.
Well, Melanie, do you...
Are we locked in this room, you guys?
We can be. Melanie, do you feel that it's more interesting to take a picture of a chef than to take an incredibly... when you see the picture, the food porn picture, the incredibly appetizing, glinting lasagna.
No.
Does that interest you artistically?
Never. And I always feel kind of sorry for a food magazine that is trying to put a great picture of a lasagna on the cover. And so many of my chef pals say, you know, I'd love you to shoot me. And then while you're there, you know, because the publisher has no money, so we'd like you to take a picture of the lasagna or the whatever macaroni and cheese, and it never looks good. I mean, some people, and not me, PS, are amazing at photographing food, but there have to be people in my pictures.
I have to say, I've very rarely seen a picture of food that wasn't
what made you want to eat
depressing.
Let's be honest. I mean, it never looks good.
Well, sometimes, no, they know how to make it look good, but like,
I know, but you don't really want to like sink your teeth into it.
Well, it's like,
can I ask a question? What's look good mean to you?
No, I just delicious.
Like in general, like even when you're taking, I mean, so you're sort of, your focus is portraiture, right?
Well, people,
right? So, but what
I don't think you want to eat people. I just think you want to, like, I mean, that was an obnoxious reply. Right. I didn't mean that. But right. I just mean that you want to, like, you want to look at it and you want it to, I want to take a picture of you, John, that people look at that and they go, oh my God, that's John in a nutshell. Right. That is my goal in life.
Right. Well, I would say that the problem with food porn right now is that it's very much at the level of of regular porn, like if you read like feminist theory, say, right, about like the male gaze and all the rest of it, Judith Butler or any of these people that would tell you like, to them, pornography means like having like Miss Pammy or somebody like blonde hair and giant boobies and everything.
Dress up like a nurse.
Right, and they're objectified or whatever. And like, now there's all these other kinds of pornography.
Waitress, nurse.
But now there's all these other kinds of pornography that have different character and personality, and there's a little bit more of the certain personhood, the actual character of the person, that they're not just a blonde dummy.
Right.
And the lasagna is still at the blonde dummy stage. It's all still at the
Well,
like,
see, that's what I don't understand or know. But when I look at a food magazine, when people ask me to take a picture, for example, this pizza, I mean, it looks really good, but I'm not, how can I ever make it jump off the page, make you want to run there?
Right. But then if you look at the blogs, like, for example, the pizza blogs have their own technical things. Like, they have what's called an upskirt shot. So just as a way to express pizzitude, they'll take each slice and they'll shoot it underneath so you get a sense of the char level on the bottom.
Yeah, but that's like only you're noticing the char level, don't you think?
No, but the point is that that's food photography too.
Right.
Now, you've seen all the horrible cell phone pictures, right?
Yeah.
You must have been mad. People take pictures. You have such beautiful food in Dovetail, and they take those.
Just last night, we had to ask someone to stop using flash. In the restaurant.
Let me tell you one little celebrity thing. So I was, for some reason, I'm very good. I'm the photographer of Kate Gosselin, who is a Dancing with Stars. She's the K+8. And she is so lovely. And I've photographed her like 5 times. We met on a shoot and she said, I feel really comfortable with you. I'd like you to photograph me. I'd like to go out for dinner. And I said, okay, where should we go? Where should we go? She said, I want to go to Nobu. Everybody talks about Nobu. So we go to Nobu. We sit there and all of a sudden there are all these flashes and I'm thinking, oh my God, don't they keep the, I mean, they know, keep the paparazzi. I turn around and they're photographing their food. And I said, Kate, don't worry about it. They're photographing the food.
She doesn't need to worry.
Call her from Taylor.
Oh, great. So meanwhile, you know, I don't think she's going to have to worry about that. They'll be taking pictures of fishes more than her.
Exactly.
In the years to come. Now we have another caller coming through and, Jack, you want to put the caller through? Hello, caller, are you there?
Hello.
Oh, hello, a lady. How are you, madam?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, what can we do for you here on the Mr. Cutlets Show?
What's your name?
My name's Taylor, and I'm calling to talk to Ms. Dune.
Oh, really? Okay, Melly, you want to feel this one?
Wow. Hello, Taylor. Well, you must be a foodie, and I suspect that you know and understand Josh's wonderful food.
Yes, I do. I love Josh's book about the burger, and he knows where to get the best meat in New York City, I hear, from Pat LaFreda.
You know what? Like, listen, there's a lot of good meat that's not from the LaFredas. I love those guys, but it's not like they have a monopoly on great meat. Certainly, maybe hamburger and steak they do, but Taylor, have you ever been to any of my events? My Meatopia, various lamb events, Lamb Bam, Thank You Ma'am, Slaughter of the Innocents, Baconalia. I don't know if...
I haven't.
I think that you are a ideal candidate to come to Meatopia. You know, we're doing a big barbecue event in Governor's Island, meatopia.org. It's going to go up in a couple of days. I hope I hope everyone will go to it, and I think that you, as a fan and friend of Melanie's, should get free tickets to go eat the barbecue there. We're going to have all kinds of great barbecue and everything. And I can't tell you how much pleased I am that you read my book, The Hamburger, A History.
But Taylor, do you cook?
I do cook. I cook a lot. And
do you cook meat?
I love to cook meat. And red meat, chicken, anything. I love to cook meat.
Well, Taylor, we happen to have one of the great chefs of our time here. Would you like any kind of a cooking question that you would address to John Fraser?
Except kangaroo.
Well, I wouldn't know anything about kangaroo or where to get it, but I was actually just wondering, like, the best way to cook a delicious roast chicken. Like, what? you know, seasoning, kind of flavors.
Good question.
Just a simple,
delicious roast chicken. Now that Boulay Market's closed, I can't get a roast chicken to save my
life.
And
John is exactly the guy who would know this. You're one of the first people I would
question,
turn to.
That's a good
question,
Taylor. Right.
I think the most important thing about cooking a roast chicken is sourcing the chicken, actually. The actual chicken itself is pretty important. And I'm a purist when it comes to chicken. I like chicken to taste like chicken, not like something else.
Like an Empire or Murray's chicken.
Absolutely. Right. Bell and Evans. They're all great.
Bell and Evans is my favorite.
Great.
But what do you do with this chicken once you have it, John?
I mean, for me, it's a salt and pepper inside and out, you know, inside the carcass as well.
You put any butter on it?
Yeah, and then make a half a lemon and a sort of a bouquet garni inside the carcass. Tie it up. Put some butter on your hands and basically lather it up like you're giving it a massage.
Doesn't that rub the salt and pepper off?
No. If it's cold butter, it won't.
Yeah. So you put the salt and pepper on and then smear the butter on top of that?
Yeah, well, you massage it in like you're giving the chicken a massage.
But like under the skin? Because I don't like that.
That's weird. Not under the skin. Yeah. Under the skin, basically it separates the skin from the meat and then the fat doesn't go in the meat. It goes around the outside of it. Yeah.
Now let me ask you this, John. How do you make a chicken in the oven so that the white meat doesn't get dried out, but the dark meat gets cooked through all the way? That's really the great challenge.
Right. I mean, it's the challenge that there is no answer for unless you separate the dark and light meat.
But you do that?
Yeah, we separate them, actually. But, I mean, if I was doing it at home, what I would do is I would start it start hot. I would start hot and then go low for a longer period of time.
Taylor, there's also, the method John is using is a good one. Also, Barbara Kafka, the cookbook author, is a proponent of the high heat method. She cooks a chicken at 500 degrees all the way through.
Really?
Yeah.
For how long? How long does that take?
It takes like something like 40 minutes or 50 minutes.
Wow. And it doesn't get too burnt on the top?
Listen, did you ever have a piece of crusty roast chicken skin that was too crispy for you?
You know,
never.
You know what, Josh? I think you're right. I don't think it can ever be too crispy.
You know, the other thing that I do, John, is, and this is another thing, like, sort of is cheating, and it's the same basic idea, but what I do, Taylor, I make the chicken, and I get the breast just the way I want it. And then I take the chicken out. I cut the breast off.
Yeah.
I turn the thing upside down so the dark meat is exposed.
Yeah.
And then I crank the hell out of it so that gets cooked and crusty. You know, everyone wants the crusty thighs.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what's your favorite part of the chicken, Josh?
Oh, the thigh, obviously.
The thigh.
And, I mean, if every chicken, if the breasts and legs fell off into the ocean,
right,
I would be happy.
I just want the carcass. I want you to carve it away and leave me with that so I can be like...
You want to pick at the oyster and the tail, the ass.
Well, I'll tell you the truth, too. Let's face facts. If, at the end of the day, all I really want is the skin from the thing.
Right. Mm. Well, I don't think you can say anyone, but that's fine.
I always wanted to have... I wish you could go to the colonel and say, I want just like a box of skin.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you've been to some of the yakitori places where you can have chicken skin.
You know
what?
It's never good. Those yakitori places taste like gas. Yeah. They cook it over gas, and it all tastes like gas.
You know, that's very true. That is very true. You're so right. What a good call.
If you drink enough beer, it tastes...
Yeah. Well, and if you drink enough beer, vegetables taste good.
Well, how about the Chinese that were like, cooking up cardboard.
Yes, though. I don't know. Yeah. That doesn't sound good either. Yeah. Well, Taylor, I hope we've answered your questions. I hope you attend Meatopia.
We invented a question for Taylor.
Visit Ozersky TV. Remember, it's Ozersky.tv. And I very much appreciate you calling in. I hope to see you soon.
Great. Well, I can't wait to go out to Governor's Island and run to Whole Foods and get myself a kosher chicken to go roast that tonight.
You know what? This is we need more young people like Taylor.
Exactly.
Out there, you know?
Big kiss.
How could you tell she's young?
Thanks, guys.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, so this is our last segment coming up on the Mr. Codlett Show.
People in the audience, Gucci rapping my name. I write rhymes and assert them inside the brain. And DJ Polo, the man up behind, he operates the turntables when I'm rocking my rhymes. It's a demo. It's a demo. It's a demo.
half nutter, go cuss. You heard the boy Slice, is he nice or what? He's the main entertainer inside the show, and he goes by the name of DJ Golo. So give a demo. It's a demo. It's a demo.
Hi, I'm Josh Ozersky, and you're back on the Mr. Cutlet Show out here at Roberta's. Now, that, of course, was Paid in Full by the immortal Eric B. and Rakim. I think, you know, Melly, they all talk about Biggie and Jay-Z.
Exactly.
And, of course, the terrible modern rappers like 50 Cent and DMV and all the rest of them.
DMV.
But there's really, as far as I'm concerned, there's Scarface and there's Rakim, and that's I don't think you need any rappers beyond that.
Hear, hear.
Now, this is our last segment, and we've talked about a lot of interesting things. We have John Fraser from Dovetail. We have Melanie Dunay, the author of My Last Supper. And John mentioned in the previous show, I think it's worth mentioning here, that he's doing special vegetarian dinners on Monday. So if you are looking forward to going and eating a meal that will leave you hungry afterwards.
No.
Oh.
You
wow.
should hasten to Dovetail.
Right.
On
I just
Monday.
Woke up. I was taking
And Melanie is she's doing a show, a book called My Last Supper 2, the next course.
I am. I'm calling the second course.
I mean, it should be like the afterlife or something.
No,
like,
it
how can there be a second?
Because, you know, life, come on, be flexible.
Well, we were thinking about people that should be in the book.
I know you were.
Obviously, all the big names are in the first book. It's a veritable who's who of gastronomy. But,
Sans John Fraser.
Yeah, what happened there?
I know. Well, we didn't meet. I didn't realize how cute he was.
Oh, wow.
They don't
He's
get much
in.
Cuter.
Oh, wow.
They don't get much cuter than right. Fraser.
Too bad it's radio.
Now, Melanie, you just also,
if
I'm not mistaken, you also, didn't you come back, you did a book about country singers and you got to meet Charlie Pride and all the
did.
Big country
yeah.
singers?
Yes, I did. I did a book about country singers and I went and on this year's journey, I went to Nashville probably 2 days a week. Dallas, I went all over the country and sort of explored why country music is such a huge phenomena. And it was very, very interesting.
Who were some of the stars that you shot?
Well, I did, of course, the ones that I should do, like Taylor Swift, Carrie Underwood, Brad Paisley, Kenny Chesney, all the big. I mean, you know, Kenny Chesney is the biggest ticket seller in the entire world.
What?
Yes.
I don't even know who he is.
Well, you should because he's amazing.
Kenny Chesney.
Kenny Chesney sold more tickets than the Eagles, the Rolling Stones.
Yeah. Was he the one that was married to Nicole Kidman?
No, that's Keith Urban. But he was fleetingly married to Renee Zellweger.
Listen, I'm glad that there's pictures of these guys, but what about the real country singers?
Well, there's
George
there's
Jones.
George, okay, so
Young.
George Jones is so amazing.
Now, how is he still alive?
Well, I think that there's a little bit of Weekend at Bernie's going on. Just kidding. No, he's amazing, and he's just doing it. There's Charlie Pride. There's, who are the old-timers? The other old-timers.
Loretta Lynn, obviously.
Yeah, all of those. I mean, and they're so absolutely amazing and interesting.
Did you shoot Willie?
And no, well, I did do a full-pronged Melanie Dunay attack on Willie Nelson. From all sides, and I never got him. I mean, I don't even think if I was a Navy SEAL, I would have gotten him.
What about Waylon Jennings?
No. Well.
Okay.
No.
All right. Well, then. He's dead, you're telling me?
Isn't he?
No, I think he's alive.
Oh, is he alive?
Maybe
know.
He is dead.
I was gesturing like dead.
Yeah, dead.
I
don't know.
Gesture.
You know what?
I thought she was saying, don't say that word.
Yeah, no. I wasn't like, don't say it.
Well,
F-U-C-K. So anyway, it was a really interesting journey. And
he is dead.
Yeah, he is dead. Thank you very much. Phew. I was right. Now thinking that I lost all cred. So he is dead. But yes, he's dead. So thank God I didn't get him.
next thing they're going to tell me Johnny Cash is dead.
Right.
But I did, I have to be honest, I ate really interesting food because I didn't even know what a meat and three was.
Well, what is the food, that, what are some memorable meals that you had while
Well, I had, the- my favorite is from Nashville, a place called Another Table. And it's a meat and three. So you go and you pick your meat. So it could be pork, fried chicken, ribs, and then you pick three vegetables. So it could be green beans, which are often kind of stewed in lots of potatoes, and maybe a sweet potato or something else. And literally, I mean, they might, some might term it slop it on your plate, but it's super, super, super delicious.
You know, I am, John, I don't know if you know, have you ever done anything with the Southern Foodways Alliance?
Mm-mm.
A friend of mine is a man named John T. Edge, who's one of the great scholars and activists on behalf of Southern Foodways. And he organizes a lot of lectures and tasting tours, and he's written a lot of books about Southern foodways and traditional Southern cooking.
Right.
It's as different from the food that we eat up here in our diners as this Keith Urbans or whoever is from the regular, you know, the regular musicians we listen to today, like Gordon Lightfoot or Bread or whoever.
It's truly American food. What they're serving and eating down there is truly American. I mean, that's sort of what, you know, what our founders ate.
But you know
it's a history lesson.
Perhaps. It's true. And the bacon is a good, they still, like, it took them a long time to learn to do barbecue up here, which I think they finally.
So where do you eat barbecue in New York?
In New York, the best barbecue is at Rub, probably. Wildwood is very good, and Hill Country is very good. Those are the three that I go to. But there's a bunch of good, like Blue Smoke. There's eight of them, all of which are better than any place in Memphis or any place in Atlanta. Yeah.
Do you agree?
I don't know. I don't think I have the credibility that Josh does on this.
I'm very well informed about barbecue, and I'm very unsentimental about it.
Right.
Because I was a judge, so I know what really great barbecue tastes like. But there's other things they can do in the South that no one's been able to do here. Like here in, I'll give you an example.
Checkerboard pie.
Here in Roberta's, Carolyn Bain produces what is universally regarded as some of the best fried chicken that's ever been in New York.
Really?
Yes. Now, obviously, Charles Gabriel of Charles Southern Kitchen in Harlem is the acknowledged master of the form, the virtuoso. But Carolyn is, I mean, as close as anyone has come to.
Like vice president.
Yeah, she's the vice president of fried chicken. But her fried chicken is so different in character than real Southern fried chicken. And truth be told, so is Charles. They still have never done the real fried chicken in the North. They've never done the real chicken fried steak. You can't get pot liquor. I mean, there's a lot of things that they just don't know how to do here.
You're right. But why, do you think?
Well, it's a good question. For one thing, John, you know, will tell you that you have to do things in restaurants that are doable, like something that takes one lady all day to make two portions of can never be in a New York restaurant.
It's also a question of commerce, you know. The need has to be there almost in order to, you know, there has to be a sort of supply and demand. There's that kind of balance.
Well, you need an educated public, too. Right. Like, for a long time, nobody knew what good barbecue was like, so they would go to Dallas BBQ and were happy with it. And now there's this chicken renaissance went on, so they eat the Momofuku chicken and the Locanda Verde chicken and whatever. Yeah. But I mean, like, that's not really fried chicken. Eventually they'll get hip to what, you know, real fried chicken is like. And the stuff down there, like, that cooking was all based on maids. Like, the cooking there was pre-industrial. It was women, or more commonly their maids, that worked all day. And then they cooked with things that were dirty and smelly, like lard.
Yeah.
Like, the reason that the fried chicken is so good there is it's cooked in lard.
Yeah, yeah.
Good luck getting somebody to stand at a pan full of lard, you know?
So true.
It's like potato latkes, right? Like, we all who are Jews, we grew up eating potato latkes. We know how great they are. A Gentile that goes into a restaurant, like the Carnegie Deli or whatever, and gets a potato latke, gets this heavy, eggy, laden, bread pudding-like object that has nothing to do with the ultra-lacy, you know, diaphanous.
But can I tell you that I was the guest chef on a gefilte fish thing, and I'm not Jewish, so I don't know what that is. And I was the stinkiest motherfucker you've ever known. Like every pore, I might have well have gotten a facial.
Well, you know what? There are worse things. Well, that's interesting because that's the same, you know, that's a quenelle.
Right.
It's almost the exact same thing. Yeah, I mean, like if somebody never had a quenelle, well, it's like the pizza too. Like, look, we're looking at pretty pizzas. Like, I just did this great thing on Ozersky TV where I brought Jim Leahy, the great dough girl. Oh, yeah.
That was delicious. A great
Domino's pizza.
Fantastic. Yeah, great. That was great, yeah. great.
Well, but if you, most of Domino's customers have never had Jim Leahy type dough or even Roberta's type
Can Jim
dough.
Do it in 30 minutes or less?
Jim could probably do it. Say in 8 minutes or less. Just ask Miss Leahy. No, but I just think that it's just a question of exposure, you know. Like so much else, you know, in whether it's in kitchens or schoolyards, exposure is really nine-tenths of the law.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, talking of photography, three-star gastronomy, kangaroo meat, these are all subjects that I could chatter about all day, Melly. But surely our time cometh quickly.
Oh,
the
no.
end is nearer than it is far. And in fact, I see our dusk encroaching upon us. Now, I'm here to sum up with the beautiful Melanie Dene, the gifted photographer behind Our Last Supper, and the equally talented John Fraser, the chef owner of Dovetail, maybe one of the freshest and most alive and most self-conscious of the three-star restaurants in New York. I myself am Josh Ozersky. I write in Time every week. I'm on Ozersky.tv on the web, and soon you'll be able to come to Meatopia, my big meat event. In the meantime, we're here at Roberta's. We're here on the Heritage Radio Network. We're brought to you by Barter House. Our theme is done by Life in a Blender. And I'm Josh Ozersky. And this is the Mr. Cutlets Show.
Mr. Cutlets, Mr. Cutlets, when you swing around that pork chop, I get a whiff of heaven every time you pass my doorstep.